This is MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's Russ White.
Here's Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis with MSU's Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, Stephen Hsu.
It really is our pleasure to welcome Vice President Stephen Hsu, our new Vice President for Research and Graduate Study. Now, Steve, as people have sort of interacted with you, they probably don't recognize that you were born of a land-grant faculty family in Iowa. And so being in a land-grant university is something that sort of was part of your growing up, and so it's not new to you.
Not at all. I grew up in Ames, Iowa, and my address was Rural Route 1 out in the country, and we had in the lot next to us, there were some people who grew some corn, and there were even some people who had some pigs.
You know, I think as you look at research, it's, one of the first questions, one always asks is why? Why is a university, why is a college engage in research, and what's the value, I guess, not only back to the school, but to our mission, the state of Michigan, and to society as a whole? Why are we engaged in research at Michigan State?
You know, I think it's a really fair question for taxpayers and parents who are paying tuition to ask that question because, you know, research is very specialized these days, and the average person just has trouble understanding what it's all about. The way I like to explain it is that the research we do today is what is going to make the future awesome for our kids. And one example I like to give is that when I was a kid growing up, I used to watch Star Trek, the original Star Trek with Kirk and Spock. And I remember that communicator that they used. I thought, wow, that's awesome. I bet in my whole life I'm never going to – by the time I'm done, we're still not going to have something that cool. And right now on the table, I've got in front of me an iPhone, which is actually cooler, if you think about it, than what Kirk and Spock had. And how is it that I have that? If you ask an engineer at Apple or Samsung who builds one of these things, most people might think the innovation for this device actually comes from them. But if you ask one of those engineers, they'll probably point to their professor or to research done at a university as being really the key innovation that led to this device. You've got a microwave antenna in there that's tiny. You've got microchips. You've got more memory than supercomputers used to have when I was a kid in your phone. All those things are consequences of research that was done 20, 30 years ago at universities. And so if we want our future to be as amazing to our kids as today is to would have been to me when I was 10, we've got to continue investing in that research.
So I sit here next to you. I think I have three Apple products in my possession
right
now. You've
got the trifecta.
You hit people, and I think that's an important thing, that we live in a world of technology right now, but people – are what motivate and push us forward. And in that process, you're not much different than a Tom Izzo or a Mark D'Antonio in that you have to get out into the marketplace and find the best of the best and recruit and offer packages very much like a coach would with scholarships and the like in order to entice them to come to the greatest place in America right here at Michigan State University. And I would guess that you maybe look at it a little bit like recruiting a student athlete.
You know, I think everybody in society understands and loves sports. And business people really like sports because they're competing every day in their businesses the same way that teams and coaches are competing. Universities also compete. So when we're trying to recruit a really good researcher, a really good graduate student, a really good postdoc, all of those people have choices the same way that a star football player, when they graduate from college, they have choices as well. And so we have to compete every day. We compete on the basis of salary, research package, graduate stipend. There's actually even more flexibility in the way we compete relative to what the NCAA allows. You're not allowed to double the scholarship offer to some student just because they've got a great jump shot, whereas we actually can. And when we're competing for that really great computer science grad student, MIT might offer them significantly more stipend money than we do, and we might lose that kid. So it's a battle every day, and it's really driven by resources.
When we have concerts in the Breslin Center or the like, many of the performers will have specific needs that they want to have in their locker room. Might be all red jelly beans or the like. What are some of the values that an individual who is engaged heavily in research and you want to get 110%, as they say, out of them when they're in the process? What are some of the variables that might come into play? Some of it, maybe there's some that are way out there.
You know, the thing that's really refreshing about all this is that most people who go into research, they're idealistic people. The thing they really want from you, from me, or from Luana, is the resources to be great. They're generally not, you know, salary is a kind of way of keeping score, but they're not as obsessed with salary as ordinary people are, actually. What they really want is the resources to hire a great team, to build a great lab, and really to make the breakthroughs that will impact society.
And the collaboration opportunities that you have in the state of Michigan, you know, we look at it as competition with a variety of different universities, but also private practice that's engaged in research in this state. I have to think that that becomes a benefit as you reach out and look for individuals to be part of our program.
Absolutely. You know, this state has a very deep history in manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, the auto industry. I think those are all things which going forward are going to be more and more important to the American economy. We're currently recruiting a guy who is an expert in human-machine interactions, the way that people relate to machines. And that's going to become incredibly important as the auto companies change the cockpit. You know, everybody wants to use their internet-connected devices in their car. There are going to be safety features where the car senses threats and makes the driver aware of them. All of those things have to be integrated and integrated with an eye toward human psychology and human attention spans. And so that's a direction I think that's really promising for us.
Is Michigan State in your role engaged in startup businesses, trying to create new business, not only in the state of Michigan, hopefully in the state of Michigan, but others where you get entrepreneurs that are stepping forward and trying to create new solutions to the research?
You know, we there are sort of two aspects to this. One is the technologies that our researchers here develop, getting them to the market in an efficient way, helping those people. A lot of those people are sort of propeller heads. They're not thinking about the marketplace. They're thinking only about what's going on in their lab, helping them figure out what has commercial prospects and what, you know, really you're going to have to wait another 20 years to see any commercial development of. That's an important part of it. But aside from the technologies, we want to help students here who have business ideas. And they may not be technology-driven. They may just be, hey, I think there's a better way to do this. Or I think people really buy this type of service or this type of product. And we want to enable those students so they understand, these are young kids, so they understand that if they really can execute on their idea, they could actually grow something very small into a huge business, which impacts the world.
Well, I think as you look at your background, it ranges from physics into economics, and to have that mix and to have that blend is unique. And I applaud President Simon for having that vision, because you do have to have the full cycle, I believe. It can't just be what's done in the laboratory, but it's taking that and making this a better world. Because of the research that happens on our campus.
You're listening to a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and Michigan State University Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, Stephen Hsu.
WKAR.
I want to come back to growing up a bit in Iowa with the corn and the pigs and seeing Star Trek, and then pursuing an academic path in theoretical physics. And so many parents confronted with a child who, and particularly in this day and age where their area of interest isn't exactly matching a job. So would you help people understand sort of the value of theoretical physics?
You know, my dad was an engineering professor, and he actually had friends in graduate school. He's another Big Ten guy. He got his PhD at Minnesota. And he had friends who wanted to do theoretical physics and just had trouble getting jobs. So he actually warned me. He said, Steve, you should really study. The best field for you is probably electrical engineering or computer science. And he was actually right. If you think about what fields have, you know, really grown the most and had the most impact on society. So he gave me good advice. I didn't take it. kids are that way. My hero when I was growing up was a guy called Richard Feynman, who is a well-known theoretical physicist. He was at Caltech, and that his presence there was really the reason I chose to go there for college. And it has worked out for me. Theoretical physics is really only for a pretty small fraction of society. But if you look at the impacts that those individuals have made, like the Manhattan Project, if you look at the early history of the computer, all of the early development on computers was done by theoretical physicists and mathematicians. So there are always the people who are right at the edge. Most people don't understand what they're thinking or talking about, but if you wait another 30, 50 years, you'll see the impacts of what those people are doing.
And so your father's push about electrical engineering or computer science led you to be an entrepreneur?
Well, actually, it was a more indirect path than that. I was already a professor, and I was really well inside the ivory tower when what happened was the internet revolution in the 90s. And just by accident, one of my grad students and I discovered that a bunch of our machines in the Yale physics department had been hacked into. And when we started looking into it, and I had not really followed the specific technologies about how individual packets of information are routed around networks and how they're either are not encrypted to protect the information inside. And when I started digging into this, and I was so outraged that this hacker had caused us so much inconvenience and that we couldn't track him down. We tracked him back to a computer in Mexico, and then that computer was connected to some other computer somewhere else in the world. There was no way to find this person, even though he had wreaked so much havoc. He was sniffing packets in the physics building. He could read everybody's email. He had stolen passwords. He could do all kinds of things. We started playing with the tools he had left on the computer and on the computers, and I realized I could see what some grad student in the lab down the hall was doing. I could see if they were going to a porn site or, you know, what they were doing on their computer by monitoring it. So I realized, wow, this whole field is nascent, and there's got to be a lot of innovation and products that people are going to need when the internet becomes part of our lives. And that's turned out to be the case.
I think that's a story that is about why you invest in great universities and people in great universities, because you can put them into an area. You can even define their area very narrowly, which was what Yale did for you. You had a particular set of things. But the capacity to explore and think about what happens around you and take that tangent is one of the things that separates, I think, universities from corporations. So it's very hard if you were sort of doing your short-term task in a research lab in a corporation to have all of a sudden sort of stopped everything and begun this new line of inquiry.
You know, universities are very special places because they're repositories of creative people, highly trained people, highly intelligent people, and they have a culture that encourages experimentation, new ideas. And so it's not a surprise that if you really do a serious study of any technology, any product that's innovative, and you trace it back, you'll often find that the origin hits some university.
And I think that's why it's so hard for us in an age of accountability to be able to argue for this essentially inefficient space of ideas that have produced, a company or two companies in your case that have had economic impact and are very valuable from a technological perspective for the country. And at the same time, if you were just sort of measured in a very narrow way, you probably wouldn't have been very successful.
it takes a certain perspective to realize that you need to invest in risky endeavors and endeavors that you can't immediately see where they're going to lead. And that's what we have to do, because nobody can predict what is going to happen 30 years from now. But it's the activities today that are happening at MSU that are going to impact that future 30 years from now. One group that sort of appreciates this at a slightly smaller time scale is venture capitalists. Venture capitalists are very used to the idea that they're going to invest in 10 companies. Each of those 10 companies is led by an extremely smart, energetic team of people. But 8 out of 10 of them are going to fail. Only maybe 2 out of 10 are going to succeed. And they're used to that. They plan for that. So if you walk into a lab on campus and you say, well, gosh, I have no idea whether what this particular professor's work is going to lead to, But much of the work won't lead to anything, but that's the way it has to be. It has to be just actually a risky thing where some of it's going to fail and some of it's going to succeed.
So part of what Vice President of Research do is sort of be the internal venture capitalist with enough sort of sense of being able to sort of assess the landscape, not simply internally, but against our competition, because there's competition around the world for us, and make those essentially venture capital bets.
That's exactly how I view my job. And we have limited resources. You know, we're in a situation where students are strapped to make their student loan payments and pay tuition. The state has budget problems. So we have limited resources, and we have to allocate them in the best possible way. I think Mark has the same situation where he's got to figure out, well, where does that marginal dollar, that's what economists call it, the extra dollar, if you had one extra dollar, where would you put it? Are you going to put it in the arena? Are you going to increase some coach's salary? Are you going to buy some more jelly beans for the locker room? That's what every leader in every organization has to do.
I have to think one of your bigger challenges is the balance of optimism and pessimism, and how you handle each situation that comes before you. Are you going to engage it in an optimistic or pessimistic approach? Is that a fair assessment?
It's very fair, because first of all, if you're too pessimistic, you're never going to be in the business of investing in research and future companies and things like that. You'll never do it. You've got to have some optimistic streak in you, but you have to be hard-headed, because the people who are too optimistic, they're just going to blow their resources on the wrong things. Mm-hmm. And so you have to know when to cut it off. That is the hardest thing for any venture investor or even CEO of a company, is when to say, hey, we tried it. It didn't work. We're going to have to cut that off. Mm-hmm. And that is extremely hard.
I think my dad was a public school administrator, and you talked about your dad and the influence. Is as you look at intercollegiate athletics, there are things where we touch the edge of research. And you look at the outdoor hockey game or the work that we do with Nike and in developing products. It's an exciting part of our business, and we don't even dabble close to the levels that you do. But we do feel that in a unique way, it connects us to the rest of campus in a positive way. Through the College of Engineering, we do quite a bit of product, and that's a fun part of our job.
You're listening to a conversation between Michigan State University President Luana Simon, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and Michigan State University Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, Stephen Hsu.
WKAR.
Steve, I want to. You have two small children. We began with talking about growing up in Iowa and your father's advice, which you didn't take. So there are many people listening who are thinking about science. They'd like to see their kids be very, very successful entrepreneurs. And so, if you were thinking about your children who are a little bit younger than 10, but still in that age grade, and the kind of advice you'd want to give them about the heroes that they might need to be looking for in fields, about who they would emulate, or areas that you think in the next 20 years are going to be the cutting edge pieces, what would you be telling your kids? What would you suggest for other people to tell their kids?
Well, without getting into specific areas, what I would like to say is that we're in an age now where the educational resources available for our kids are phenomenal. So if your child goes on YouTube, if they have a question for you, like why do we put salt on the roads in the winter? You can go on YouTube and you can find a very clear explanation. You can see a demonstration where someone adds salt to ice and it lowers the freezing point and melts the ice. So kids can really learn a lot today, and they need encouragement. One of the things that I think really we Americans have to focus on is our competition with international competitors. And we need to benchmark our educational systems against theirs. Any company has to know what its competition is doing. Ford has to know what the Honda products look like and how their products compare to Honda. We have to know, what does a kid in Beijing or in Delhi learn at age 10? What have they already covered in school, and are we covering that same material? And I think that's a very crucial thing. Parents have to be proactive about that and think about, not just accept, is the school doing a good job, but to think, is it doing the things that my kid is going to need for the future?
And I want to sort of go back to a hero. As you think about the people that are relatively young in science, and reading about them, who would be heroes that you would suggest to parents, or names that might not be familiar that folks should learn a bit more about? Because I think heroes are important to have in kids' viewpoint, because everything is abstract.
I mean, I agree.
And you have to sort of think about, I'd really like to be like that person. What happens in athletics. People watch, sports, and they pick a player, and they want to be like that player. And so we need more heroes in science or mathematics. So what would you suggest about some heroes that people might be able to suggest to their kids?
So one guy who's already very famous is a guy called Stephen Hawking, and he and I are actually in the same field of research. His story is amazing, because he found out when he was a grad student that he had ALS and he was going to lose control of his body. And yet he amazingly adapted his mind so that he could do physics calculations in his head. I mean, he cannot move his hand. He cannot control his hands anymore. So how does he do? When I do calculations, I have to fill pages and pages with equations, and he's doing this stuff in his head. So it's a great story about how, if you're really determined and you really want something, you can adapt and overcome obstacles. So I think that's a great story. Other people like Steve Jobs, I think Steve Jobs is a great story. He followed a very iconoclastic path. He dropped out of college. He was incredibly passionate about what he wanted to accomplish. You know, he was kicked out of Apple at an earlier stage and then eventually came back. So it's another case of somebody who just didn't let go of their dream but eventually had a huge impact on the world.
It's one of the things that I do worry about in terms of this country and the role that entertainment television plays, including college athletics, is that we create too many heroes that are in a very narrow field of work. And not that they're not good people or can't be good role models, but it becomes – there's no good place for young people to find those, which is why I think the internet is really important, and it's important to be able to find those stories.
I think the one thing that concerns me with technology, whether it be television or the many different mechanisms that can be used on the variety of handhelds or iPads, is the reaction that individuals are having to the immediate flow of information. And if you're a young person, I have three kids, and you see it in the house, and I have to check myself all the time, is the absorption of the positive, the push away of the negative, but as they're pushing that negative away, it's still having an effect on their mindset, the potential for depression. And you see all this technology moving, and you know, I think as coaches, we've had an opportunity to evolve with it, and now it's evolving so fast that it's almost a full-time course as an administrator to keep coaches on track, that kids are different than they were 3 years ago because of the pace of technology. Would you agree with that?
I agree with that. And, you know, I think one of the things that's important for leaders to do is try to communicate values. I mean, we can't control the information that our kids are going to get access to because these smartphones and tablets, you never know what they're reading or looking at. And so I think it's all the more important today that we communicate core values to those kids about what's really important in life and what's not important in life.
So as I look back at the Super Bowl, which just happened recently, there was two great brothers, two great leaders. And one of them, Jim, is very much like Captain Kirk. The other, John, very much like Captain Picard. Which do you consider yourself to be? Who do you track yourself after?
You know, younger people today think Kirk is kind of corny. And Picard is a little
bit intense.
Yeah.
He was very intense.
And people think of Picard as more of a technocrat and more rational. But I've got a soft spot in my heart for Kirk. Okay. I really do admire him. Because, you know, Spock was smarter than him, better than him in every way, but Kirk always had that instinct. He could always pick the right path to go forward.
And Picard had Data.
Yeah.
So it was...
Well, and so what I would say is that part of being a vice president for research is not ignoring the data and being able to use the people around you who have it. But what you're really hiring is that instinct of Kirk. And
right.
So I'm glad that Steve answered in that way, because when you think about all the ideas and all the things you could do, there's a certain amount of feel to this that is the venture capital feel of imagining tomorrow and putting it with today, whether it's in nuclear physics or engineering or computer science or some of the issues we're dealing with in terms of human interface that includes social behavioral sciences and humanists and those kinds of things. So it's fun to make sure that we have our Captain Kirk at the helm. So
I'm glad
thank you
we beamed him here.
We beamed him here. So thanks very much, Steve, for talking with us.
Thank you.
That was Michigan State University's Vice President for Research and Graduate Studies, Stephen Hsu, talking with MSU President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. For more, please visit research.msu.edu. And to hear this conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com. Now, Simon and Hollis welcome in WJR's Paul W. Smith.
Well, Paul W., it's great to have you here in Mid-Michigan live, not on the phone line, but live.
In person. With you in your studios.
Yes.
At Michigan State University.
Right. Much, much balmier than your studio.
Yeah, well, I do keep it. I keep it chilly, and I think it keeps us all on our toes. Now, when you were in there, and thank you again for filling in for me. When you were in there, did you find it to be uncomfortable, or did you find it to be a brisk wonderful working environment.
I appreciate a chilly atmosphere, so I enjoyed it very much.
And isn't it nice we have a warm atmosphere, at least personally?
It's wonderful.
No matter how chilly the studio might be, our relationship has always been very good. Hence my Sparty
it is.
Here
nice.
On my lapel. Yeah.
American flag, you're looking great.
I got it all going on here. Yeah. I did not make the American flag. I did make the Spartan.
Well, we appreciate it. You know, part of what not everyone has the benefit of being able to listen to you every morning. Roy and I turn you on as
God
soon as we get into
that.
The car, but our commute is shorter, so we don't get to hear the entire program. But you have been so upbeat about the future of Michigan, and listening to you at the auto show. So you want to comment on that? Because most people are sort of still a little
bit. Believe me, and I understand. And when things happen in the biggest city, most important city, that doesn't make any sense, like in Detroit, when the city council chose not to accept the help from the state of Michigan to save Belle Isle, I don't blame people for scratching their head and not being very positive and say, you know, we're doomed. We're in trouble. But my job, as I see it, is to try to accentuate the positive. I certainly can't eliminate the negative, but I have a positive, upbeat view of our state. I wouldn't live here. I lived elsewhere. My career has taken me to New York City and a variety of places. But I wanted to be back home at WJR. I wanted to be here growing up in Monroe, Michigan. And you know I'm a Michigan grad and a Michigan State supporter every day but one a year, basically. Maybe two.
Now that basketball's back, you'll probably get to three.
Basketball. Who knew?
Who knew, right?
and we love Tom Izzo. He comes on every week. And Coach D'Antonio during the football season comes on a couple of times every week. We love the relationship. And, in fact, when we did our broadcast recently from Lansing, Coach Izzo came by and talked about yet another charity event that he's involved with. He and Loopy, so giving back to the community. That's what I love about Michigan State. You've got people who are doing their job and doing it well, like Mark Hollis, and frankly, like you, Madam President. Right. But you guys also understand how being a part of the fabric of the community, and our community is all of Michigan, and for Michigan State, all of these United States, and frankly, the world now, it's so very important and so often missed, but not by you guys, and I appreciate that.
With the theme today of optimism and pessimism, how do you wake up every morning deciding which direction you're going to take on certain issues?
Well, I couldn't do anything like what I do without Ann Thomas, my executive producer. We are a good team, and she is so helpful in so many ways. That aside, the two of us can walk into that studio in the morning with a stack of stuff to do and not get to any of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the nature of the business. You didn't see it. I left it in the car. I wheel around this bag that's like the football the president has, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, it's heavy. And there are times I take nothing out of that bag but a pen and a stapler. But I still have stuff in there. It's probably just my blankie. It's my security blanket. But we go in there open to what's happening in our world. And let's face it, we're the voice people here. We like to say we're the first stop for the last word in what's going on. And we work hard to be fair. People know where I stand on a lot of issues. They know I agree or disagree with them, but I give them all an opportunity to be heard. I really appreciate it. I can't remember if it was when I was working in New York at the New York Times or Philadelphia, the Philadelphia Inquirer, somebody said, and I really appreciate this, I haven't thought of this in a long time, I had learned the art of disagreeing without being disagreeable.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, Mark, to answer your question a little bit, we walk in, we're open to what's going on. Mm-hmm. We have a few things that we do, or some things now with this, we're dealing with a new clock that we have to do and keeps the trains on the tracks and all of that. But if we enter with a positive view and enter not thinking we're going to make a name for ourselves by putting someone down or tricking them into making a mistake or whatever things are done now these days, we've never done that and don't ever plan on doing that. And so it just kind of keeps everything positive. And that nice, brisk studio and a whole bunch of coffee keeps me moving things along, which was really what you expect, I think, for a morning show.
Like you, I grew up in the state of Michigan. I returned after a short stint in Denver and Pittsburgh. And you want so much of the greatness that this state really has at its fiber. You want people to live here. You want people to engage. You and I both enjoy northern Michigan. you know, we both see the value in what happens in Southeast Michigan and how critical that is.
Critical.
You have an opportunity to be exposed and talk with so many key leaders and develop in your own mind, I think, some solutions in the future. And you've talked about so many of those on the air, but can you really condense some things down to this is where the state needs to go in order to improve?
You know, I've rarely taken that as an issue and given my 2 cents worth on that. I'm all ears when the governor speaks. I'm all ears when the opposition speaks. And I'm supportive of things that I hear that I think are positive. Mm-hmm. If I were to say, it's pretty obvious that we need people to work together in Lansing, just like we need people to work together in Washington. We've had an environment of people fighting each other.
But don't you think that first one would be one of the primary things just to jump on is developing a philosophy in the state of Michigan where regardless of what municipality, what county, what state, working together is the first step.
But the thing that's happened, Mark, and it's not just in Michigan, it is countrywide, is as soon as somebody gets in office, it appears to be the job of the people on the other side to not let anything good happen, not admit anything good's happening, to stand in the way of anything good happening. And you see, the problem there is that we, the people, are stuck in the middle, and we, the people, are not getting served by the people who are supposed to work for us.
Mm-hmm.
And that, to me, is a huge problem that is a problem with Republicans, Democrats, Independents, Libertarians, I don't care what party affiliation. The fact of the matter is, when we have an election, somebody wins, and I believe when that somebody wins, everybody should try to work with that person to try to get things done that are good for the state. They may disagree. They may obviously have heated debate. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be the plan of either party to be sure to stonewall on everything that comes out of the other party so they can get to the next election. Because all we have now is a series of elections and failed legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just the way it is.
And planning for the next election.
And the planning begins immediately. Right. I couldn't believe that there was such talk. Well, I don't even want to get into it. I mean, we have – talk about being in the moment. We're not in the moment as a city, a state, or a country.
And how do we fix that?
I don't know. I know the problem. I don't know the fix.
Well, I thought that the way in which – because I've heard you on a number of occasions talk about infrastructure, particularly roads for the state – that you acknowledged and have acknowledged that you're not for raising taxes.
I don't. Madam President, here's what I feel, simply. I'll talk personally.
Yeah.
I don't believe that I'm not taxed enough. I don't believe that I'm undertaxed.
Right.
Now, I may not be alone in feeling that way. Right. If you look at what you look at the gross amount and the net amount and you go, wow.
Yeah.
So that's what I believe. But I also believe what I think the point you're getting to is we've been talking about bad roads and destroying our cars, and somebody's got to do something about them, and there's got to be a way, and there's got to be money to do it.
But I think what we had in maybe olden days, or at least the days I would like to romanticize, people would work on both of those things. That you didn't hold up one because the bigger issues weren't resolved.
Oh.
Or I didn't get my way on this thing.
That's another part of the problem, Madam President, that you get right to the heart of.
And so this was a compromise. If you think about, I'll pick Indiana because I'm born in Indiana. I've been here for 40 years, so most of my life. But in Indiana, which is an anti-tax state, they made a decision to raise vehicle costs by your fee on when you re-register your car. And it's a sliding scale, and they've got a gas tax, and they dumped it all into roads over the last 10 years. So you can tell a discernible.
It's made a difference.
You can tell you can tell almost by closing your eyes when you cross the state
line. Kind of like when we leave Michigan into Ohio.
Yeah.
When she's riding, not driving,
she closes her eyes.
Whatever.
I know the way so much I can probably. But I think that's an example of a state that is anti-tax, relatively conservative on a whole range of issues, but still at some point made a decision that they're going to work on the long-term issues, but right now we had to have a solution to roads or we weren't going to – businesses, it was costing people more money and their cars breaking tires and axles. So we were going to do this because infrastructure was a state responsibility. But they've still continued to cut budgets. They've still continued to try to pursue what some would view as a conservative agenda. But
you got to be realistic.
But they were realistic about making a decision that made the state more competitive. We have some difficulty at times deciding that very pragmatic moment where we can agree to disagree and still work on these other issues.
Well, you know what I think we're getting closer to, though, is people understanding that we really have taken a look at and tried to eliminate as much wasteful spending as possible. And once people are convinced, confident that money isn't being wasted, then they'll understand that if we do need some extra money and it really is going to go to fix the problem, then we'll say, okay, so be it. I think.
Well, but I think also, if I would say in Indiana, there was a confidence that people would continue to find waste, because you could always find some, but that we were at a point where we couldn't just hold the roads hostage mm-hmm. for that next set of exploration. And we tend to hold things hostage, whether it's Belle Isle or whatever,
for the next thing.
That
I thought you were getting at, yeah. that I took away from yeah. this too, is that they always add on things that are not at all related
right.
to what
mm-hmm.
we think they're voting on.
Right.
And I don't know when that started. Maybe that's been going on forever. But it, to me, seems even more critical that we stop doing that.
Right.
Let's talk about what we're actually doing, and let's be upfront about it.
It's probably been going on since the 1700s.
It probably has. Yeah.
There's more interest groups, so the portfolio is getting bigger.
I think you're right, Mark. It probably has been going on since we've been doing this. But it's not good, because some of the things you hear that are added on, you go, wait, what the heck does that have to do with the roads or the
right.
whatever?
It's my vehicle to be able to get my widget in. And in exchange for my vote, you get my widget.
And right. they should not be doing this with mirrors. They should not be doing this by hiding things. It's not the way it should be.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
And you're listening to a conversation between WJR Radio's Paul W. Smith, Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis, and Michigan State University President Luana Simon.
I just got to say, if he's back there, I think he's still here, but Dr. Kirk Heinze was so instrumental in us finding this location, and we really appreciate
yeah.
it. And what a great facility you have here. Scott Pohl, a reporter for WKAR, the student yeah. station, he took me around a little bit,
yeah.
gave me a little view of the thing. But we're just thrilled to have Kirk with the Greening of the Great Lakes yeah. on WJR every Sunday at 7, also on the Michigan Talk Network.
Yeah.
He does a great job. Russ White, who used to work at WJR, producing this show and producing that show.
He's the second part of our Go Green, Go White.
Well, and he does send out notes. That I'm going to take credit for the suggestion. The White House.
Yeah.
Have you ever noticed?
Yeah.
I mean, why not? If my last name would be White, all of my stationery would say the White House. I mean,
why
use
not?
It. It doesn't work the same with Smith, but the Smith House. But we're loving the relationship that we have with MSU in every way. It goes well beyond sports.
It does.
The sports thing is obvious and wonderful. But it goes well beyond that, and it's great to be a part of this relationship that works, that
yeah.
it really does work. And when Mark talks about coming back, it was great to come back mm-hmm. to the state of Michigan
yeah.
knowing that we have so many great universities and institutions
yeah.
that, in this case of Michigan, Michigan State, yeah. for example, work together,
right.
have this corridor of mm-hmm. things that are being done by the university that are benefiting the entire state and the United States, and it's a great thing.
Mary Sue and I were talking, and as we go around the world, I think what becomes both important to us in terms of the connection to Michigan, but also you get a little bit frustrated at times is you know, almost every province in China would like to build a Michigan and a Michigan State.
Sure, absolutely.
And you've seen that when you've traveled to Europe. And how they want to think about the partnership of their university system anew as they think about the future or Africa, and so I think that we just continue to try to work together with Wayne on the corridor and with other universities, Michigan Tech, Grand Valley. It's not simply working with ourselves, but with others to try to make a difference for Michigan. But it is still frustrating, I think, about not getting people turned around that we do have to aspire to higher levels of education in order for the state to move forward.
It's hard to imagine that you run into that. I don't
yeah,
see that.
Yeah,
I don't.
Yeah,
you know, that's
yeah.
not my world at
yeah,
all. But
yeah.
you're telling me that you still have people who don't understand how important higher education is.
We do, or that any old degree is okay, because what you see at I think at Michigan, Michigan State is creating the magic for the future, not just the magic of what happens on the campus for today. And your association with Michigan over the years, you know the discoveries, you know all the things that have made a profound difference, because we're always sort of looking for tomorrow. And in the same way politics are a today deal, sometimes education is simply a today deal.
Well, you make a good point, Madam President, about how much China or other places would like to have what we have with Michigan State and the University of Michigan. I can tell you this. I'll be going soon to Geneva for the mm-hmm. Geneva Auto mm-hmm. Show.
Yeah.
Later, I'll be in Shanghai again. I've been to China a number of times. Yeah. What I love, from the layperson's views, I love that the people, let's take China for example, really know Michigan State University and University of Michigan. They really know. If they know I'm from Michigan at the stand, on the Chrysler stand, for example, they'll come over and they'll talk about specifically, these two universities have their attention and they want to come here to go to these universities. That's a very big deal. You're seeing it from the other side where they want to have their own universities and all of that. But the people that I see, the lay people, the regular people out there and their children, they speak with great pride when they say, "Oh, I'm very familiar with your area because of these universities." That's you guys have done a great job for that.
That's also why Detroit's important.
And I think one of the things we strive to do is take the best of Michigan State to the world, but also bring the best of the world back here to our state. Growing up in Port Huron, listening to WJR, having you in our town for the Port Huron and Mackinac race. And now have the opportunity to work with guys like Tom O'Brien and Jeff Marcereau and so many other people down there. It's an amazing experience.
And of course with Steve Courtney doing the MSU tailgate show.
I mean, he's loves. Okay.
Well, I was thinking at least they're not holding Steve against us. So, but seriously,
we enjoy that.
Here's
show
a guy who I'm going to just say it. He was as Maize and Blue goes. And when we made the transition,
he wasn't excited about spending Saturdays with us.
There were a lot of people, who were just jarred by a 30-year tradition ending and whatever. Yeah. He couldn't be more green and white than he is now.
And all are what you are because of Ann Thomas.
Well, we are indeed. As I said earlier, we couldn't do it without Ann Thomas. No, and frankly, my wife Kim, who helps out tremendously now too. That's just we're all lucky to have the people we have in our lives.
Yeah.
And lucky to be influenced by those folks. And I want to get back to – I want you to finish your thought on Detroit.
Well, I think with any place I go in the world, I mean, they do know Michigan and Michigan State. That's not to minimize the value of any other place, but it is the bellwether as they judge our state and our country. And it's also Detroit. And that's not to minimize the importance economically of Lansing or Grand Rapids, but it is the symbol of what Michigan means to people. So the resurgence of the automobile industry is really important for the image of this state and the way that we can sort of make a difficult transition. But so is Detroit.
And so is the fact that universities understand that training people to go into the auto industry is a very good profession. It's a very important thing. And I think there were times in the past, I probably told you my story in the past, universities sometimes get a little full of themselves. And I'll say University of Michigan for sure, because that's where I went so I could see it. And I was doing radio since I was 15. And so by the time I got to Michigan, I went into the Radio 421, the introductory course, and I went, oh, boy, they're showing me how to put tape on a reel. I do this. This is what I've been doing since I was 15. So I went to the department head, and I said, can I place out a 421 and go to 425? He goes, well, no, because you can't be in 425 unless you've had 421. I said, no, I understand that. That's why I'm coming to you to ask. And I said, while I'm here, we're so close to Detroit. There are so many great radio and television stations. We should be sending students there to get real hands-on experience. And I kid you not when I say he looked at me and said, Mr. Smith, the University of Michigan is not a trade school. That's the way they thought back then. Well, thank God that thinking is now more realistic.
Right.
We get people into the radio and television stations because we understand the experience.
Right.
We get people working as interns in the auto industry because we understand how important that is. And we don't have any room for a snooty view of what education is and then in the real world how we apply it. Thank God.
And that's one of, Mary Sue and I talked, you know, one of the advantages of a land-grant heritage was always blending that theoretical and that practical in ways that created something special. It wasn't one or the other. Every once in a while, we get out of balance, as most things do, but the heritage is to put both of those things together. I'm really excited on the internship front, the work of Dan Gilbert and others about bringing interns in varieties of ways
to downtown.
This is a huge number, and we're actually bringing busloads of kids to Detroit to learn about Detroit, to see what's there, particularly in that Woodward Avenue space, not quite midtown, into the river. And it really is exciting to get them to see the possibilities for doing internships and being a part of the resurgence of Detroit. So
it's a big deal.
Yeah.
It is a big deal. And God bless, if you start naming them. But Dan Gilbert is the one that comes to mind first because he's been so active. But it goes back to Mike Illich. Bill Ford, the Ford family, Peter Karmanis.
There's a set of people who have just been committed. Illich's will fall into that category as well. I think the corporations that have stayed in downtown Detroit, Karmanis, we hope to get another one of our alums, Tom Gores, more connected to the community as he sort of begins his ownership of the Pistons.
You know, and I got to work on meeting him. I still haven't met him, and it's kind of like I hadn't met Sergio Marchione, and he says Marchione, believe it or not. Everyone says Marchione or Marchione, but he says Marchione. It's Canadian background part of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I hadn't met Sergio Marchione. He was kind of a mystery guy.
Yeah.
And the first guy to tell me that he was going to be great was, in fact, Ron Gettelfinger when he was president of the UAW. And I said, yeah, well, I don't know. I've never seen the guy. He's like, right now that's where the new owner of the Pistons is for me. I don't know him. I don't know anything about him. I just found out he may be like half Lebanese and I'm half Lebanese. That alone should mean we should meet each other and go eat like at the Beirut and Toledo. Some good Lebanese food. But I didn't even know I didn't remember that he was an MSU grad. You got to be very proud of that.
We are, and it's one of the things where he has family connections still here that they come in and out. He has lots of business dealings, and I think they want to, as a family, become more and more engaged. They're just learning sort of the process of the Pistons, and so I think that's something. We'll see if we can get the two of you together. I'm not sure what—
He is fascinating to talk to.
Oh, I would love to. Yeah. Have you had him on the show?
We haven't yet.
Well, you ought to. Because I have never talked to him either. So
you
can get him before I can.
Maybe the next time Mark's the co-host, we can be able to set something up for you. There may be one person in the world that—
Wait a minute. When he's hosting the show, I'm not there. I want to be there.
Oh, okay. Maybe. I said co-host, you know.
So, oh, that's right, co-host. Yeah, he was co-hosting with David, David Brandon. And I didn't get to hear it, but I heard so many great things about it.
We had a blast. It seemed like we were together, like, every day that week.
Isn't that funny?
We haven't seen much of each other since. Once the season starts, it kind of—
Yeah.
But summertime, we collaborate on a lot of things.
Well, Paul W., we so greatly appreciate not simply the great work that you do on the radio, but the great work you do for Michigan.
Well, it's nice of you to say. I love Michigan, and I love doing what I do. I don't tell my bosses, but I'm certainly not doing it for the money, although that helps a lot. Is Tom O'Brien still here?
Yeah.
Tom, I'm just saying that because it sounds good. I'm doing it for the money, pal. Okay, just so the boss thinks that. I mean, the reality is—
You're doing it for less than you're worth. I think that really would be—
You have seen my check, but the truth of the matter is that the three of us are very lucky because we're doing something more than just working.
Yeah.
We are not punching a clock and going home, and there's nothing wrong with people who do that.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to do something, and I just feel so blessed and lucky to do something that I have never— I hate getting up early in the morning. I'm not going to lie to you. I don't sleep very much because I like staying up late, and that's stupid for a guy who's doing a morning show and has to get up at 4 in the morning. But the fact is, once my feet hit the floor, there's not one time in over 44 years that I didn't want to go to work, that I didn't go, I'm going, this is great. And there have been some nights where there's about 20 minutes of sleep.
Yeah.
But once I'm doing it, going and doing it, I love it. And I know I'm pretty lucky about that. And I would hope for that to happen for as many people as possible. And I know that you guys aren't just doing this job because it's a job. You're doing it because it is a love, and you feel a great commitment to this university, to this state, to this country, and I salute both of you for that.
Well, thank you. And Roy said to say hello.
Please tell him I can't wait for him to take me down with the band.
We'll do that again because the game is here this year, and so your invitation is always a standing invitation.
He thinks he is tricking me into eating green ice cream and taking several pictures. I will happily eat the green and white ice cream that's up there.
Let him think
there.
He's tricking it. Means a lot more to him.
Roy, thinks he's tricking.
He just believes that it's a good. It's good to give you a good dose of MSU tradition.
You don't have
here.
To. You know what? I love Michigan State University. My nephew Jack Avant is here. He's a junior here, and he's part of your team that you have. Green Line, or I'm not sure what it is. Reaching out to people and helping them have support. He loves it. It's what he does.
Well, and you know, from Roy's perspective, if Mark never played the football game, we gave the band more time. Roy would be happy.
Yeah, can you do something about that, Mark? Come on.
I mean, Roy would shorten up the, the party so there'd be more band.
We're very lucky to have some great teams in both basketball and football among our schools.
And some great bands.
And some great bands, and great opportunities. Yeah. And I thank you for the opportunity to come and spend a little time with you.
Well, thank you. Take care.
That was WJR Morning Drive personality Paul W. Smith talking with Michigan State University President Luana Simon and Spartans Athletic Director Mark Hollis. To hear the conversation again, please visit SpartanPodcast.com and keep up with Paul W. at WJR.com.
Turn it up, a little bit higher. Radio, turn it up, burn it up, so you know, radio.
You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. Join the MSUAA family, and you're instantly connected to our network of over 500,000 Spartans in every corner of the world. Whether it's community, connections, career growth, or class, that's what the MSU Alumni Association is all about. Join the world's largest Spartan Nation community at alumni.msu.edu. That's alumni.msu.edu. The MSU Alumni Association, your personal network for life.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.